Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, and you are listening to an episode in our podcast series, Oh, the Places You Will Go, an SLP Spotlight, where I get to interview speech pathologists who have interesting positions in our field, from the very basic to the most interesting spots, places, people they work with, and all of that in between. I get to have the fun of just chatting with these SLPs, finding out what they do, how they got their jobs, and any words of advice they have for other SLPs. So listen as we explore all the wonderful things an SLP can do. Good morning and welcome to Dr. Christy Davies, who is on our Private Practice Possibilities series. And she is here with us today to talk about her business, Speech Language Associates, and her augmentative communication work. So welcome, Dr. Davies.
Good morning. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you here. The important part of the series that we're working on with the private practitioners is a lot of people know that they can go into become a speech pathologist and go into medical or school settings, but the private practice work is where I find that people are really beginning to niche down into some of their really big passions. Tell us about your story, why you became a speech pathologist and what you do.
Sure. So it was slightly unique as to why I became a speech language pathologist. I was actually an American Sign Language interpreting major with a minor in journalism. Very long story short, the closest thing to sign language was speech language pathology at the university level. I went to two colleges at one time, but it was the best opportunity, and I met some of the most amazing people that very first semester, and actually the month before school started. And then something personal happened in my family, so the combination of the two is what made me realize right away before the semester even started, like, speech is where I will be going. And I, you know, I knew at that point I was going to take it, you know, for its home run, as I say, like through the finishing the bachelor's into the master's and eventually the doctorate. My grandmother was diagnosed with dementia and forgot who I was very quickly. But then also just lost the ability to verbalize. And so that hit me the worst. And this great community of people that I met when I moved for my speech program. I worked at a summer program at the Jewish Community Center in DC. And I met some of the most amazing individuals who were the same age as me at the time. I was almost 21 and they struggled with communication. Some of them were nonverbal. And they were just so happy. They were just so blossoming with their positivity, and they had such fulfilled lives. I was taking the person I was working for, I was taking her to Niagara Falls, you know, with her wheelchair. She would come visit me in New Jersey. This is basic. All these things. And her best friend was, had major speech concerns. Her quote unquote boyfriend, he was nonverbal. And so I went to his 21st birthday, and this gentleman came with this device. And before this, the friend only spoke with his eyes. Yes, eyes going up, no eyes going down. So obviously, you know, I got very used to this. I traveled with the two of them, like Rehoboth, you name it. Like, we lived it up. And this gentleman came in with this computer, and I was just in awe. And I said, yep, that's it. Got it. I know what I'm doing. I was at that point in this like third month of schooling for speech.
In an undergraduate program
at University of Maryland. And again, at night, I was still in school for ASL interpreting. But during the day was when I went to university and into speech language pathology. And I knew right there, that was it, between my grandmother and her dementia and this peer. I mean, he was my age, you know, and we hung out and I went to his house. And you know, he was in a wheelchair, quadriplegic, nonverbal. He had a TBI at a young age. And this gentleman came in and gave him eye gaze. And I just said, that's it. That's it. And that's all I needed to know. So I did what I had to do. You know, I did all the correct classes. I learned about dysphagia. I learned about voice and all the things, but I knew very narrowly focused what I was between the ASL and AAC, that was it.
That's what I'm finding with the private practice SLPs. They are so focused on their passion and their love. I can hear it in your voice. I can see it in your hands. The listeners, but your hands, you are clearly, you talk with your hands, I can tell. So it's neat that you can do what you
want.
They're
nice and folded. Yes.
Pardon?
So they're nice and folded.
Nice and folded.
To keep down. Yes. So that's how I got into speech.
And you went all the way through undergraduate, graduate, and doctorate.
So yes, I had some, so from my graduate, I went to, from Maryland, I went to Temple. I had a lot of moving going on, which I find just kind of made me the very well-rounded person that I am. So I started in California, went to Maryland, went to Philadelphia, to Temple, and then I went to LaSalle for my graduate. From there, I had some amazing mentors and advisors at LaSalle, and they said, take the 9 months, take your CF, do not go right into your doctorate. And so I took her advice and was applying during that whole 9 months, seeing where I wanted to go and researching, you know, online versus hybrid versus in person. And since it was so AAC specific, that already narrowed down where I was speaking to different directors and admissions, and they were guiding me to say like, oh, our program isn't meant for you, you know, for AAC, we're more specific to, you know, X or Y. So then I was accepted, and I waited like I was advised from my amazing mentors previously. And then I started as soon as my C's were done, or I received my C's, excuse me, my CF was done. And, you know, a marriage, a couple houses, and a handful of kids later, I finished. And so I received my doctorate in speech, emphasizing on parent training for AAC.
Excellent. How has COVID changed your work with AAC?
So I feel very fortunate that it dove right into my dissertation and my research topic. So the training I did for parents was actually online. So obviously with COVID in our geographic location specifically, a lot of things shut down. We were in the state of emergency for quite some time, and we're still extremely limited. So it really helped me understand, you know, online platforms and privacy, which I think a lot of us don't really take into full consideration, I should say. I mean, we all know about HIPAA. I'm not saying we don't, but all the technology flaws out there, and even understanding like, you know, the Wi-Fi's and internets and all those sort of privacies. So it helped as far as being able to, you know, be a little more efficient, a little faster potentially than some others. As we were up and running within the week of closure via, you know, Zoom or Google Meet or other platforms, because it was something that I was able to teach people on my staff, or I've already been kind of going through. We've already been doing hybrid models in our AAC consultation that we provide in the practice, you know, both privately for clients and in schools. So we've already been doing mixes of hybrids, just respecting schedules and geographic locations and car usage or lack of car usage for families who, you know, couldn't get to us.
Right.
So it was a seamless kind of transition for us to go more tele than previously.
I am sure there's someone out there who, like you, is in an undergraduate program like you were and resonates with the AAC work and the population that you're talking about. For someone who does want to go that route and is so focused from early on, what words of wisdom would you have for them?
So I would say, well, I guess I'm a little type A when it comes to education. So I just constantly on different professional developments and different CEU opportunities, both, you know, remote online as well as in person. I find it in great value. I find networking during those, really getting to know the people who are making our field what it is in the AAC field specifically, because it's those nuggets that are helping, and not being a stranger to all the, you know, the peer-reviewed research articles, you know, really using ASHA's CEU format that you can read the articles and answer the questions. Because I find there's only so many beginner level, per se, CEUs online that you can take. And a lot of times people get so hyper-focused on looking for some sort of certificate to add a couple extra initials after your name, or, you know, some extra title, that they actually forget to understand the field more globally. And as of right now, which everybody knows, ASHA doesn't have like a board certified X, you know, related to AAC. It is in the works and they're in the middle of all of that right now. And that's extremely important. But with that being said, I think it's important to stay current with the technology and understand the technology's history. So understanding where was that company's technology, you know, a couple years ago versus a decade ago, why, you know, why are they in existence? What is their philosophy? Being specific to getting tons of training in the various technologies, not being married to any one company, and making that known and feeling that within yourself. You know, sometimes everybody needs to take a step back and be like, oh, I kind of, you know, maybe was using or getting too interested in one type. It's really important to stay, you know, as objective as possible during this process. So what I enjoyed doing, and obviously I was single and without children, I traveled as much as I could to the various conferences specific to AAC, which I later was able to present at. But at that, you know, at that juncture, I was going to these places and learning from them, like Closing the Gap or ATIA, things very specific. The Pittsburgh PAL series, the wealth of knowledge there alone was just surreal. And that no matter where you are in your experience and in your practice, it will change your mindset. And I've had a lot of parents and teachers and other SLPs go to that and just learn so much. From there, I found it important to realize or to figure out more about the certain profiles that I tended to work with, you know, so that it wasn't just I understood AAC, but I understood AAC how it related to, you know, a child with autism, or I understand AAC as it related to a child with charge. So I'd go to charge conferences and get their perspective, because hearing it from a different perspective from someone who's not an SLP was pretty awesome for me. I really got into cortical vision impairment. Again, just finding a workshop that I saw and I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. And from there, it kind of spiraled, because I think it's important to her perspective. And Dr. Christine Roman is beyond amazing, but her perspective of AAC is very different than mine. So then I took it a step further. And so when I'm going to different conferences or conventions or you name it, I looked specifically for, you know, CVI and or, you know, AAC and how the two of them were married. You know, and then I know she did work with, you know, Sarah Blackstone. So I'm doing a lot of, you know, library researching on those names with AAC on my own, because I think that's the important part, is putting all those missing pieces together, because it's all out there. It's just that sometimes you actually have to look extremely hard, you know, and it's not some easy free CEU. You really have to dive in deep. So it's taking those extra steps and keep asking the questions. You know, your grad school or your undergrad might not be strong in AAC, and that's okay, you know, especially your undergrad, but just keep asking the questions, and your professors are going to know people who are, even if it's not isolated in your school, and ask, who can I talk to, or, you know, what hospital or clinic or school does have a stronger background in this so that I can get my clinic placement there or what have you.
That's a very good point to bring out. We have a certain number of clients at our outpatient clinic who are AAC clients. And if we know that we have a student who is very interested in AAC, well, then that student is assigned to that client. And right. They have that expertise and that exposure. We do have a faculty on our team who her specialty is AAC, and it just is a wonderful opportunity for that faculty member, that student, that client to really work together, because then they're operating from where they want to be operating from.
Right.
And their interest.
And I think it's important, and I always say when I'm doing some level of intro to AAC or intro to, you know, the AT world, you know, local schools or county programs or whatever, I say, just like with doctors, like why it's in your scope of practice, I find it important to stay in my lane. You know, I have, you know, the ability per my, you know, C's and ASHA and all the things to do, you know, neck cancer patients, you know, and to do dysphagia. But is it ethically okay for me? Not so much. You know, I refer that to one of my colleagues on our, right. you know, our practice, because she, you know, did go through different trainings. And that's why I brought her on board. You know, we have a team of us who are very specific with AAC, because that's how we really restructured and built where we are right now. But I find it very important. And, you know, I'm sure like all of us, next thing you know, you get a neighbor who's like, oh, I have, you know, a daughter who has an R problem, or I have so-and-so with this. And I'm like, that's, I hear you. And yes, I could probably help you, but it doesn't light a fire in me. And so I'm not going to light a fire in her. And so I don't want that. You know, I want to be genuine, and I want to say, I have someone for you, but it's not me.
Right.
Because people sense that, even if you're not overtly commenting on it, they're going to sense, especially when you eventually bring in that other person, be like, oh, what was wrong with Christy all those weeks? You know, like she did a worksheet or she did, you know, an app, but this other person came in and boop, you know, my child was more interested, engaged. And so I think it's important to, not to say you can't be more well-rounded and you don't need a niche per se, but if you do choose to go that route, just respect that someone else has the niche that you don't want and feel free to share the wealth and to pass it on.
Right. In some of the settings, you are more of a generalist. Outpatient clinics, you can be more of a generalist. You'll see quite a bit more. But then you can develop or start a private practice and then be more focused, or take a position where you pass competency levels within a hospital and become more specialized to treat those specific conditions.
Right. Yeah. And again, there are some schools around who are even creating an AAC certificate, but again, it's not like an accredited, recognized thing, you know? And so we've interviewed some of those individuals to, you know, join our team. And one time someone came and joined the day with me, which I thought was valuable that she took this time to say, just want to make sure we're the right fit. And I thought, well, of course we must be the right fit. You know, you took the extra mile, you went the extra mile and got this certificate. You're like, you at least have to be on a better leg to stand on than someone else. But then she approached me later and said, you know what? I know I have this background. She's like, but I can't do what you're doing. And so I think it's important. Again, that's where I go back to, okay, take the time ahead of time when you're early in your decision. Doesn't mean early in the field when you're just graduating, but anytime you decide to make this decision that this is an area of specialty I want, take the time, you know, do the online PRC Sotelo webinars and cough drop and Dynavox Toby and do it all now. You know, there's tons of new eye gaze technology and you need to know it because you can't just be happy with understanding the iPad apps. You know, like you can't just go one route. You have to know them all. And it's not to, it's not to say that I'm a master at every single one, but it's to say I make sure myself and those on my team who do have this area of specialty, we make sure they afforded the time to get this professional development. Even if they get a certificate from it or not, that's not the important part, but that they actually feel that they are confident and can bring that level of confidence to their next appointment and be successful for that student or that client.
Is there an online resource that supports people who are interested in AAC work?
Well, there's a variety of them. One of the best ones is Dr. Carol Zangari's blog, The Practical AAC. She just has such a wealth of information. She actually was my first dissertation chair when I was starting this process in my dissertation. She's a wealth of knowledge. So somewhere in there, if you did a search, you know, on her site, on her blog for, you know, programs with AAC or different professional development, that might really put you to where you need to go. On Facebook, there's a really active page, AAC for the SLP, that has some really great information. But again, there too, like sometimes people talk about certain certificates that might help maybe in the assistive technology world, but aren't specific with the AAC. And I do make sure that while you can have knowledge in both, that it's understood, especially the young, you know, the younger ages or newer pro, you know, when you're newer in our field, that the AAC, the most important part of that is that language development, you know, and understanding all that psycholinguistics, that you want a system that can help marry that so easily. that it's not just about the technology, it's about understanding the language behind it. And then everything you learn back in undergraduate and graduate school about language development and what language is with semantics and syntax and social and pragmatics and all the things, that has to somehow fit in this puzzle that we're doing with AAC. So that's why it's important. I say that because people get a certificate maybe in assistive technology, but it really touch upon all this linguistics of what we do as SLPs doesn't, it might not. So I just say, be mindful of what certificates, because some of them are expensive that you're going for.
Tell us about life as a private practice SLP. How does your day roll out? Who do you work with? Joys, troubles?
Sure. I being the co-owner, I have an amazing partner, Rachel Petrin. Obviously, our roles are very different. We are very blessed to have been doubling and tripling our size for the handful of years we've been doing this. So now we're obviously wearing, you know, the administrative hats. So we're not doing as much clinically potentially as we were initially. So it's just a lot of phone calls. It's a lot of all that admin stuff. But for me, what I love is when I get the calls, I now know who's on my team and what area they feel most comfortable, you know, in serving. And I think that's extremely important. And I feel fortunate that I'm in this private practice role that we can do that. Because, you know, you might not be able to do that, you know, in a school setting or even in a hospital setting. Someone calls, it's really about schedules, like who could fit it where.
Right.
But what I tell our clients is, for me, it comes down to the area of comfort and expertise first, and then it goes down to geographics, because right now we are a go-to model. So we are, besides for teletherapy, of course, we are going to the homes, daycares, and schools, et cetera. So it comes down to expertise. And so we do travel, but then it goes down to geographics and then schedules and availability. So it's great because it's so flexible. But as obviously the co-owner, there's more responsibilities as your team continues to grow, because we have more than just SLPs on our team. So we're covering a larger area of need. But it's great when you can say yes and no. I mean that in a kind way. But knowing that I have colleagues on my team that if I say no, it's really like, I'm sorry, I can't help you, but I know someone amazing who can. Versus when, you know, when I was in the school, you have no choice. You know, you have to fill, you know, whatever that day is. You have to have that schedule full. It doesn't matter what, you know, the area of concern is. You have to do it. And I get to make the choice to say, I'm flying you and me to Florida. And we're going to go do an AAC and, you know, early literacy workshop. That's what we're going to do. So as long as it works for your schedule, like, I'm doing it, you know. That I feel, again, because I feel pretty strongly about professional development, that I feel fortunate, you know, that since this is ours, you know, Rachel and I make the decisions, we can do that. We can say, we're going to host a LAMP, you know, language acquisition through motor planning. We're going to host a LAMP workshop, and you guys get the day off for free. You don't have to take a PD, and you are coming, and we're going to pay for you to come. And I love that. That I just absolutely love.
It sounds very inspirational.
It makes all the paperwork and all the phone calls and all the other things worth it when I can say that. So,
right. Lots of control in a private practice setting. Lots of decisions. Lots of responsibility.
Yes. Yes. All of the above. Yeah. And it's, I know it sounds silly, but it's much more time consuming than I can ever. Every time I think I understand the time that it's required, it takes more, you know? So it's also understanding when you need to ask for help and who you need to bring on to get you that help, you know? So we're fortunate enough that we have, you know, assistant, since we are so big in the virtual world, you know, our assistant actually lives in Florida. We live in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And it works really well for us, you know, and she understands everything that we need. We have, you know, our weekly calls. We have a really great team that kind of keeps our head on our shoulders and helps us with our vision and moving forward. So
I like the word team. I think no matter where you are, what you're doing, your setting, it's always good to have that support.
Yes. Yes. No, we have, I think that's it too. Because when I started Speech Language Associates almost a decade ago, it was just myself. And once in a while, you know, I might bring in an independent contractor here and there if I couldn't do something. And then when we relaunched and I brought on my partner, Rachel, a handful of years ago. And so you immediately became a team, you know, like it wasn't just you solo practitioner anymore. And things just grew so quickly. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, we were a team of three. Next thing you know, we were a team of five. Next thing you know, like I just stopped counting. And to this day, I'm like, I don't count. We do what we do. And I know everybody's names and I know what they do. And that's all that matters. It's not about numbers. You know, when people say how many kids are on your caseload or how many clients, adults, I'm like, I don't count. Like I just do it. Cause you don't want to get stressed out in that. It's just a number. But the fact that I can pick and choose if I want to, you know, or the fact that I can work a Saturday because I know that I'm serving somebody, not that my family wants me to work a Saturday, or I know that I can wake up early and do a tele-AAC call. That fits my life. And, you know, with three kids and, you know, a crazy husband work schedule and all the things, that fits my life. And so that's the great thing about owning the private practice. So
sounds like it really comes from a place of your values. You're doing what you want with who you want to do it on your time frame.
Yes. Yes. That's what it is. It's being able to work from home if that's what fits for this season. Mm-hmm. It's about seasons, you know, and I don't mean like calendar seasons. I mean like my season of life right now. Right. Which is really crazy, you know, and as my kids grow up and, or whatever it is, our schedule, our family, my learning, my own educational needs change. Mm-hmm. I know that I can have the private practice evolve with me, my personal goals, my professional goals. And that's, what else can I ask for? That's great.
You have so much wisdom in your responses, like nuggets everywhere, sprinkled. I'm sure if there's a graduate student sitting and listening to this podcast, she should be taking notes.
Yes. I would say I've done a handful of guest lectures mm-hmm. at my alma mater for AAC and a couple different classes, but like I've come in one night specifically to tie in their topic with AAC. And I always say to all the grads, I say, if you ever have a question, please, please email me. Like I would be so happy. Like it just brings me such joy. I would be so happy to help you. There's no strings. I probably won't remember your name or what semester I came in to do this, but I'd rather give you the answers than you go unknowingly to that student, that client, whoever it is. I'd rather direct you in a place if I don't know the answer, then mm-hmm. and you go in without that knowledge.
Passion driven therapist. That's what I'm doing. What I'm doing with my podcast and my website, it's all passion driven, and I am so happy doing it. It's just rewarding.
That's what it is. I know people always kind of say that cliche, like you wake up in the morning and like mm-hmm. how's that feel? Well, you know what? When I wake up in the morning, and even though I might have an absolutely insane day, I chose to have that day at the end of the day. And that's mm-hmm. what matters. Mm-hmm. And I know I can make a difference because I'm choosing to make a difference. I chose this path. And again, my path was very kind of skewed. You know, I thought I was going to be an ASL interpreter. And now I'm blessed. I can use ASL as an AAC tool. You know, mm-hmm. Obviously it fits right in there perfectly. And if I ever feel kind of antsy, I go create a community enrichment ASL class. You know, like I don't need to interpret. I can use my tools however I see fit. It's my practice. You know, it's like,
right. So share with us a story where things did not go so well in your AAC world with your business practice.
I think that goes probably with obviously the most challenging cases. A lot of times what ends up happening, it could just be the nature of the world and how things are shifting. All of a sudden it not right now, you know, in 2020, but back when things were fresh for me right out of college, and all of a sudden everybody was being diagnosed or everybody had the label of autism or something. So next thing you know, you kind of had the same profile, you know, all your cases were kind of the same, especially if they knew, oh, Christy, she's the speech therapist AAC. So throw this at her, you know, got it. But there were still those, what some people call like the low incidence cases, you know, the ones that really have significant needs. And I kept wondering, where are these where are these students? Why am I still seeing the same profile? You know, ambulatory, potentially semi-behavioral or significant behavioral concerns. And then one time I got thrown this case with significant needs. And it reminded me of how I mentioned starting out with those peers, those friends I made in DC at the JCC back so long ago. He was in a wheelchair. He had minimal use of arms and hands and all the things. And I realized for the first time in a few years, like, my skill set is not going to cut it. And so that's just an awful pit in your stomach, right? Especially when you know that you don't know, geographically close, of course, you don't know who to refer them to. There is no other, like, people are coming to you and now you're the one who can. And so that was like a kind of a low, but luckily his team took the journey and I just, a lot of sleepless nights, I'll put it that way. And we found a solution for him and got him a system that was extremely out of the box thinking, but it changed who I became as, again, understanding certain areas, certain profiles, certain diagnoses. That's when I really started going specifically for some of his diagnosis specifically and going to those trainings. And it was a rocky road for a while. There was a lot of discouragement from, you know, his one-to-ones or his nurses. Like, what are you doing? You're sitting here almost every day for 30 minutes, which is very atypical for an AAC evaluation. Like, that was my job, was an AAC evaluator. I wasn't doing speech therapy on a regular IEP schedule. I was going there to specifically evaluate him. And yet we were together almost every day. And I'm like, I know it doesn't seem like something, but, you know, his arm twitched and it didn't yesterday. And that means X, you know? And so listening to body movements and observing things that I never took into consideration before, it was such a learning experience over weeks. It kind of really shaped me. And so luckily I haven't had a low experience like that again, because you don't want to feel that awful feeling that I can't help. And luckily, obviously, the student did make some success and we were able to get him a system and he was able to communicate. But it was a rough, more than several weeks of what appeared to be no success, inability to even make success. Mm-hmm. And it just was a first time feeling. You know, I would always come out and do these evaluations and whoo, you know, you get a talker. Kind of felt like an Oprah Winfrey moment, you know. I was able to make success with everybody, you know. I could shape it, I could train it, and whoo, you know, you get a talker, you know. And this just didn't fit the mold. And so it took a lot of kind of like stepping back, become humble. It's okay that you don't know everything, and just keep rolling with it, you know, keep learning. And eventually I got it, he got it, and the team got it, and that's all that mattered.
Your answer is exactly why I asked that question, because our work is not all about sunshines and rainbows, because it does not roll out that way. There are heartaches. There are times where you don't feel you've done what you've needed to do. You don't have the skill. The clients, patients have their own choices. Things don't always roll out, but you just demonstrated resiliency in the work field and the ability to continue to focus on not the system or anything, but on the needs of the client.
Right.
And huge lessons.
Right. And the persistence, you know, I mean, during those weeks, there's, you know, weeks 4 or 5 into 6, you know, where all of a sudden you have like the parent and the case manager coming to you and saying, parent, you know, isn't feeling comfortable with how things are going and we're actually considering going elsewhere. And I'm like, no, I'm into this at like week 6. Like, no, like he's actually making progress. It might not look like that. You know, it's little things like that. Like all of a sudden you're here because you want to help and you're hearing the people that you want to help feel that you're not doing it. And it's just taking a step back. And I always go back to research, but then I say, okay, not only is it what I'm doing and what I'm doing with him, the student or the client, but what am I needing to do with everybody else? Mm-hmm. What do I need to do with mom and dad? What do I need to do with grandma or the team, the nurse, the, you know, the aide? Or for me, again, because most of the time I play the role as a consultant, so there's another SLP. It's not me. You know, I come in very specifically for one student, one district, and then I leave, you know, and I might come back in a week, 2 weeks, a month. So it's not about me and that student. It's about what can I do for everybody? And if there's one person who's not feeling it, you know, they're unhappy or they're skeptical or what, however word, you know, you want to give that, that could be like that breaking link, you know, and we really need to make sure that the chain is as smooth as possible. And I need to work on that person, because even if I'm finding success with the student, it's not going to matter. If all of us aren't on the same page and all feeling comfortable or the same excitement or, yeah.
So on that note, tell us a story where something went really well.
There's so many. I always say I'm going to like start a memoir, The Stories of the Talker Lady. I don't know. Watch out for 2030. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't have time for that. I don't know. Just one. I guess I could just think of one recently. I have a son who I just became pregnant when we decided we were launching, but just after the relaunch of Speech Language Associates. Next thing you know, whew, you know, when life finally calms down, you know, God throws you gifts, whether you're expecting it or not. And so I started SLA pregnant. And so changes your perspective when you're working with a population that you might have that at home, you're right? So like I had a little boy who's 18 months, and next thing you know, I have to go serve a little boy who's 18 months. It changes your perspective. You know, it's one of the reasons that I struggled, you know, with elementary females, because I have two girls right now. And so this very young boy, and he's been using sign language, which is, again, people kind of know me for the sign language that I do. And that's how, through the loops, they kind of found who I was. And so that's the only reason I came there, was to do speech therapy via sign language to teach him communication things and all the things related, you know, to expanding expressive language via sign language. And it took a while, but he was, I had a heart to heart with mom. He was doing so well. But as you know, American Sign Language is its own language. And so it's missing all those little words. And so I'm mentioning Brown stages, or I'm mentioning natural language development. And I said, you know, things like ing, you know, things like verbs and all those, all that, it's not so easily pronounced in ASL. And I love, love, love ASL. And, you know, we work with the deaf DHH, hard of hearing and all that all the time. I have some great interpreters on our team, but he's a hearing individual in a hearing community. And he's, you know, he had a trach, and the plan is that it's going to come out. Like medically speaking, the team is predicting he will be talking by 3 or 5, if all goes well with, you know, the medical circumstance. So long story short, I was able to talk mom slowly into AAC. And it was like a light switch. When this little kid, again, the size and age of my son, little, he wasn't even 2 yet, and he was given a device that was as big as he was, because it was the only one I could lend him after his trial was finished. At least I had something in my library that I didn't need every day, and I lent him something. And it's so funny because it, you know, it covers his high chair tray, and here he is, and he's telling mom, like, I love you for the first time. And he's finding things on the talker that he's not supposed to find, and he's saying stuff about, like, daddy, go, something, something. And mom's like, I can't believe, and he knows what he's saying. Like, this kid is a little baby genius stuck, you know, without having verbal words. And the things that he was saying or telling on people, like he would tell his nurse, like, mommy, eat cookie. You know, here it's like in the morning and they're supposed to be eating, you know, their cereal and their fruit. And he's like telling on mommy to the nurse, you know, and the mom would text me later, you wouldn't believe what, you know, and I'm like, yes, you know, it's like, I got it. This is perfect. You know, he's going to be so fulfilled. He's not going to be behind, you know, in his language needs, you know, all willing, you know, God's helping all the things. He's going to be able to verbally speak someday. But you know what? She understood that we don't want to get that gap. We don't want to hinder his expressive language abilities. And he's doing it. He's doing so well. I can't add enough words quick enough for his talker. He gets it. He asks for his talker. He walks to go find his talker. He uses it in these really amazing phrases and utterances. He just turned 2. You know, that's amazing. Because so many people are naysayers when it comes to starting too early, quote unquote. And here he was, like 18 months. and he was using this AAC system, and he's still using it, and he's doing beautifully.
So, excellent story.
Yeah. So I have little pictures of this little guy who you know, the talker and the high chair kind of just, he gets hidden in all this big equipment, and then here he is, but you can hear all of a sudden this big message come out, and I'm like, oh, there he is.
Big language.
Yeah.
Little guy, big language.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Super cool. Well, thanks for your time today. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I love talking about the things I love. So that's great. And anybody has any questions, anything I can do to help. I think as speech language pathologists, I think that's also why we're here. You know, we're helpers innately. So if there's anything I can do to help, right, I'm always here.
Well, all of your contact information is in the show notes. So if anybody wants to follow up with you, go visit your website, visit your private practice, see who you do, reach out to you. They can find all of that in the show notes.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
I hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLP's podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.